Welcome to episode 69 of Understanding Latin American Politics, the podcast. I'm Greg Weeks. I'm a political scientist at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. And today I am talking to Pablo Rubio. He is a historian who is currently a visiting researcher at Georgetown University. And he's also investigador de la Biblioteca del Congreso Nacional de Chile. He researches the political transition in Chile and U.S.-Chilean relations generally. So, Pablo, thank you so much.
Hi, Greg. Thank you for having me.
So, the topic today is Chile, not surprisingly, where, of course, we've had really intense protests anticipating constitutional reform. So, we'll talk about that. But the first question I always ask people is, what got you interested in studying politics?
Thank you, Greg. During these years, my specific field of research has been Latin American and Chilean political history. As a historian, I'm interested in the political process, defining politics like a distribution of power in society and how it creates the rules for living in a community. I have published 5 books about Chilean's right-wing parties during Pinochet regime, mm-hmm. Latin American history, among other topics. Currently, I'm developing research about U.S. foreign policy toward Chile during Ronald Reagan and George Bush senior administration and their relation with Augusto Pinochet dictatorship. My main goal is to determine the key influence that U.S. played in Chile in its own role in order to support and encourage the Chilean model, a democratic transition with a neoliberalist economy, without Pinochet in office. In order to understand this current crisis, in my opinion, and recent Chilean history, it's very relevant to figure out the economy and political model that ruled the country in 1980.
Yeah, no, I agree. But one thing I was thinking, though, so when you were younger and a student, why did you decide on politics instead of anything else?
During my undergrad studies in Santiago de Chile, especially I was interested in the Chilean wing's political parties. For example, my book, it's called in Spanish Los Civiles de Pinochet, mm-hmm. the Pinochet civilian. It's very interesting because, in my opinion, to know the Chilean model, you know, that it's building for 18s, it's very interesting. And in my opinion, it's key to understand the current situation.
Yeah, definitely. And thinking of that, would you agree the transition to democracy, Chile's transition, including the economic model, helped contribute to the current crisis or even caused it?
Yes. Since democracy took place in Chile after Pinochet regime, the Chilean transition, it deployed like a pacific path, an unprecedented model, an example within Latin America. But at the same time, under this frame, survived a lot of authoritarian settlement inherited from Pinochet. Senator for Life, for example, high role play by military forces, neoliberal economy, and the most important, the constitution. However, over the years, this model showed deep imperfection and in political and economic terms. First of all, factors like a high economy and social inequality, low incomes, low pensions, and expensive social services, for example, education, medicines, provoked a deep sensation of frustration in many Chilean people, even in the middle class, despite the high economic growth, GDP per capita, during this last decade. Secondly, I think that the political corruption and collusion, especially in the big companies, increasing and radicalizes this content in the Chilean population. The root causes in this crisis are very deep.
Now, a question that I always have too is to understand the timing, because, of course, the transition took place now a long time ago. We've had protests here and there, but nothing quite this serious. So why is it happening now and not before, not 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever?
Yes. Many of these protests or mobilization of the social movement have been developed before. Free tuition education and social services, or a movement against system pension, a feminist movement, environmental movement, among others, at least he had took in place in Chile since 2016 and 2011 and 2016. Therefore, there is in a accumulation or a lot of demands in the last in this last year. Currently, in this case, the difference is that the Chilean population is more rage and polarized against politicians and group of interest. Probably, there is a new generation of young people born in democracy. The fact is that the 5 cent rise in public transport fees prompt millions of people to take to the street in different Chilean cities, sometimes peaceful, sometimes violently. One of the phrases of the movement is, it's not about 30 pesos, it's about 30 years. In addition, I could say that these mass protests have no influence for no one political party or labor union. It's just the citizen, no leadership, no with a program for demands, just making pressure toward the political system. This showed, in my opinion, that political class, Congress, political parties, have a deep gap respect the citizenship and the common people. The reaction was a social explosion in the street that is screaming, Chile, wake up, denominated like a revolution of dignity. In any case, many people consider it an elite or very elite politics and economy that has not allowed a real participation of the citizenship.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point, the question of parties, because for now, many years, polls have shown that political parties in Chile are very unpopular.
Yes.
Do you get any impression, does this help the left at all, or is it not helping any party?
Yes, in the last parliamentary election became to the Congress the Frente Amplio, right? The Frente
mm-hmm.
Amplio is a new group in the right wing. Appear, for example, a group like called Evopoli, a new right, more liberal. But in any case, I think the polls show, as you said, that the rage against the population, against the political party, is in general, right? For example, even in about Communist Chilean Party and Frente Amplio, also the rage is generalized. Sometimes about this mass protest in other contexts, obviously, I remember the Argentina 2001, right? That is a phrase, que se vayan todos.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very similar in other conditions.
Though in the case of Argentina, we just got the Peronists come back
yes.
eventually.
Yes.
Do we assume now, do you think that the right will lose the next election and we'll just see more alternation in power?
Yes. 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 It's this is the paradox, right? The Chilean democracy has been, for example, 2 years ago, Sebastián Piñera won a big majority, the big majority since the return to democracy. For that reason, for many scholars, for many faculty in general, it's very difficult to understand the current situation. Because apparently the most of the people that is in the street is against the government, but it's deeper like that.
Right. Now, moving on to the question of the Constitution, there's going to be a referendum in April 2020 about whether to reform the Constitution, which, by the way, or to have a new Constitution, I mean, which has been a demand now for many years, because of course the dictatorship wrote the Constitution. Should we assume that the referendum will be approved and that Chileans will say, yes, we want a new Constitution?
Yes. It's difficult. It's not necessarily. The political and social scenario is extremely unstable. Despite, there is a high possibility that the yes to new Constitution will win in the referendum. However, there is an important sector, for example, the extreme right wing, especially José Antonio Kast, former presidential candidate that got 8% in the last election. Piñera supporters, government parties, for example, Renovación Nacional and La UDI, groups that support measures and decree to control public order. The same people that have denounced a foreign intervention in the protest,
yeah.
Venezuela and members of Sao Paulo Forum, even a coup d'etat provoked for the extreme left during the protest. For all that, in the Chilean upheaval, the political positions are very polarized, left and wing party and society in general. I couldn't say that the Jess will won in the next April. I'm not sure because the scenario is very unstable. We will see.
One question that occurs to me too is that the originally the Constitution was written to protect the role of the military, which
Yes.
has changed a lot over time. Do you have any sense that the military cares about the Constitution or whether it is changed? Is that a factor?
Yes, the military has changed a lot from the return to democracy. I have a sensation that in those times, the military are in a secondary position, right, in the Chilean political system. I could say that from the big reforms of Lagos reforms in 2005 that reformed a lot of settlements about inherited Pinochet. I think that the armed forces are a secondary in the political system. In any case, the military Piñera, it's called in October past. In that reason, it's complicated situation. But the military, like autonomous actor, is secondary.
Okay, right. Now I'm thinking, at least from abroad, I get the impression that a lot of the focus now is on the Constitution. But if there is a new Constitution, to what degree will that reduce discontent? In other words, is a new Constitution the main answer to the problems Chileans face?
Very good question. I consider that this political solution, possibly replace a new constitution, could be a significant contribution to put an end to the crisis. On November 15, a wide coalition from left and right-wing parties signed an agreement for moving forward a new constitution that in Chile rules since dictatorship. But at the same time, it's complicated, right? Because the core problem is that the violent mobilization and turmoil, for example, looting, fires, riots in the street, and pacific protests too, continue happening in many Chilean cities. Cities like Valparaíso, Concepción, are very complicated in terms of the public order, although less that during October and November. In any case, I think the crisis is deeper. It's deeper because the people want solution here and now. Solution in terms, for example, salaries, medicine system, pension especially. President Piñera has proposed a social agenda. The social agenda for many people is not enough, right? It's not enough for resolve the main problems that the Chilean population, especially the popular classes and high and middle classes, had been through the years.
And when you're talking about salaries and pensions, how much will constitutional change affect things like salaries? Like, how much does it change the economy?
Yes. Well, the system pension, privatized, has changed by Pinochet dictatorship. The 80% of pension are less of $200 per month. Mm-hmm. And the salaries, the minimum wage in Chile is like $300 per month. The 80 Chilean population earn more less 2,000, no, 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 1,000 or less dollar per month.
Mm-hmm.
So the social situation, the high inequality has been one of the most deep factors that push to the people to the street.
Yeah, so I agree. I just wondered, will a new constitution reduce inequality?
Yeah, this is a big debate. Some lawyers or some scholars say that the constitution don't resolve the social crisis. The lawyer, the right wing lawyers, for example.
Okay.
But the Constitution, in my opinion, make a frame. A frame. For example, in the Constitution, many articles from the Constitution established to the Estado subsidiario, right? The Estado subsidiario is the fundament of the neoliberalist system.
Okay, so that I wondered that of how much you're saying the Constitution provides a frame, and so, in your opinion, can actually change structural economic problems. That's, I think, the key thing is whether a new constitution really addresses structural change.
Yes, for example, the government role in the economy. It's some social rights, for example, right to the education, free tuition, some guarantees constitutional. But the constitution, in my opinion, make a big frame, for example, in the government role in the economy. It's very interesting, that question, because the currently constitution is not easy, for example, that the government invest in new areas or create, for example, a public system pension.
Okay.
For example, the new constitution could be provide this frame for the state created a new pension system.
Okay. Now, thinking about the protests themselves, there has been a lot of focus on the violence by the carabineros, the Chilean National Police. Does it surprise you that the carabineros have been so violent?
Yes, well, carabineros' violence has been one of the most surprising during the crisis. It's ironic in one part, because before October 2019, before October, Carabineros were one of the most respected institutions for Chilean population, according to the poll. Yes.
Right.
Today, the situation is different because of high violence that Carabineros have committed in the protests has provoked a serious violation in human rights in Chile. Thousands of people are held detained, wounded, and more than 20 people have died since October. In December 30, a report released by the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, led by former Chilean President Michelle Bachelet, details, for example, multiple allegations, including torture, rapes, and other forms of sexual violence by the violence against people held in detention. This is the very interesting and inherent crisis, because the public order in Chile is complicated in those months. For the Piñera administration, it's not a problem easy to resolve. Many Piñera supported say, for example, in Spanish, mano dura, right?
Sure.
Repression against the protest, especially violent. But there is another part of the Piñera coalition that said moving forward reforms, because the social reforms are the solution to the crisis. But until now, the context is unclear, confused, and uncertain.
Do you think, has Piñera responded adequately at all to the violence, do you think? Or is he more widely criticized for not doing enough?
Yes, Piñera, some people say that Piñera is like alone in office, right? Because during the crisis, Piñera is like a paralyzed, right?
Yeah.
And the first moment, he called to the military, but after he launched, this social agenda, and right now the process is in the Congress, for example, is in those days. His conversation with respect to the new constitution. But yes, Piñera, for one part, he said that the public order is the main problem. But in another part, the next day, he said the social is the next problem.
Yeah.
It's a contradiction, your Piñera strategy.
And I have a last question that tries to get at this in comparative context. So we have this explosion of protests against the government, pressure to reform the constitution. Do you see parallels to these events and Chile's own history, or is this something entirely new for Chile?
Yes, there is a consensus that the situation is one of the most serious crises since the return to democracy, including some historical background. Before 1973, national protests during the 80s against dictatorship, or before, even before, for example, in 1949, in 1957. But in any case, I would say that since the Pinochet dictatorship is the most important crisis. For example, never before the dictatorship had the president called to the army to control the public order, state emergency. Mm-hmm. And right now, Piñera, or he did. For many Chileans, this was traumatic to see the military again on the street. For the violence, for the level of violence, or for the massive protest, I think there is a most serious crisis. I could say in general that this current crisis is part of the crisis of liberal democracies in the 21st century, provoked by political corruption or a deep gap between political institution and citizenship, and social exclusion too, a crisis of confidence about the relationship between those who govern and the governed. That has happened in different conditions, right? With the Indignados movement in Spain in 2011, the Arab Spring in the same year, or Ecuador or Hong Kong this year. It is true that have national explanation for the Chilean crisis and root causes, but these protests take part of a global process.
Actually, just one extra question. I was just thinking about a comment you made earlier, how the Chilean right tries to blame outside actors like Venezuela. Does anybody believe that at all? Does the right believe that these are orchestrated by Venezuela?
Yes, it's a very interesting problem. Until now, there is no proof about that foreign intervention. But in any case, it's very special to think that the Chilean Communist Party has only one actor that they don't condemn the dictator, the Venezuela dictatorship. The communists, for example, in Chile, was of the most serious opposite to Piñera, right? Yeah. But there is no proof. Some declaration, or obviously there is a link between many people of the Frente Amplio or Communist Party, between some militants with Maduro regime. But it's no proof until now. In any case, the Chilean chancellor, many days ago, he said that that during October crisis, there is increase the internet traffic from East Europe country. But yes, related to Russia, I can think. But in any case, there is not proof. I would say that the Chilean is a very, very national, especially crisis.
Yes, I would agree. Okay, we're out of time. I've been talking to Pablo Rubio, who is a historian who is currently a visiting researcher at Georgetown University. And back in Santiago, he is investigador de la Biblioteca del Congreso Nacional de Chile. Pablo, again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Greg.